Bill said. Can we do something to protect the propeller?
Better to convince the birds to flock off and leave us alone, Goro turned and grinned.
Air horns, maybe a couple of big eyes painted on the surface. I'll work on it.
Bill nodded, although Goro had already turned away.
Yeah, we'd probably better ground this thing until you do that. I don't want to be responsible for Outland's first aviation disaster.
Once back on the ground, Bill headed for his mad science lab for a meeting with Monica. When she arrived, late as usual, she looked around in appreciation. The lab was in its usual state of semi-chaos.
No one would ever be able to find anything in this, she said.
Which is why I can hide a complete gate in plain sight.
Bill rushed around for less than a minute, grabbing items and connecting cables, then picked up a tablet and poked it. A gate shimmered into being in the middle of an apparently random pile of junk, showing a Nebraska parking lot. He turned to Kevin and handed him the tablet.
1 hour, okay?
At Kevin's nod, Bill and Monica stepped through the gate. Bill looked over his shoulder just as the gate disappeared. He and Monica began walking.
You have all the weapons accounted for?
More or less. There have been a few reports of people having their weapons stolen, and I'm sure we're going through more ammo than we should be, so I think there's some siphoning off happening, but not enough to be able to throw a public fit. And we can't get a bead on who's doing it anyway. I've got guys watching Adam and his friends, but we can't be too obvious about it.
Or we could just shoot them and be done with it. Monica laughed.
Usually that's my line. We discussed it, Bill. We're not autocrats. And as long as Adam and his doofus friends are just spouting off, it's all First Amendment. If we start strong-arming people, we could find ourselves on the wrong end of history, and let's face it, these guys might really turn out to be all talk.
But I'm a little worried that we might be caught short if we hide too many weapons, though. We did a flyabout today.
I saw it. Pretty impressive.
Bill smiled before continuing.
What I didn't really mention to anyone is that all the predators aren't gone. They've just put a little distance between themselves and us.
You could see that from the air?
Yeah. There's a big zone of land around Rivendell filled with either our cattle or native grazers that have figured out that it's a safe area, or at least safer than farther out, where we find lots of wolves and big cats. We haven't thinned them, just pushed them outward. As long as we keep shooting at a few of them every day, they'll stay away, but...
I get it, Bill.
Keep enough weapons available to handle any predatory incursions while not making so many available that we'll be potentially arming a bunch of insurrectionists.
So what's on tap for tonight?
I need to set up a secure communications infrastructure. You need to make sure that the misplaced weapons aren't obvious. And we still need more portals. Busy, busy.
I have a few other items to take care of as well,
Monica laughed.
Paranoia really is addictive.
65. Too close for comfort. August 9th. Matt sat in his pickup, idly drumming his fingers on the wheel as Bill played with the tablet.
Yep, this is it,
Bill waved to the crew sitting in the pickup truck. Let's set up. Matt turned off the engine and everyone piled out of the truck. Two people climbed up to sit on the roof of the pickup, AR-15s in hand, as a pack of wolves that had been following the truck casually settled down about 50 yards away to get some sun. The rest of the crew unloaded the truck gate and the portal generator and set everything up. Meanwhile, Bill walked around with the pole cam, watching the video feed. He kept one eye on the two guards, ready to dive into the truck if they started to get agitated. In a minute or so, Bill stopped.
This spot is inside the rental office, and the ground level is close enough we can open up here.
They assembled the truck gate, moved it into position, and Bill powered up the portal. There was the usual blurring. Then they saw the inside of the Home Depot. Bill grinned and shook his head.
I will never get used to that.
They'd previously discussed strategy and duties. It took less than 15 minutes to pull everything through from the other side. Workers returned through the gate, laden with equipment. On the Outland side, Bill watched people pop out of the gate from both sides, walking in opposite directions.
That's actually making me dizzy.
Finally, they were done. They shut down the gate, covered all of the plundered equipment with tarps, and loaded the portal hardware back onto the truck.
This is going to take forever, Matt commented.
We're looking at about 8 trips, and at the speed I'll have to drive on this terrain, it'll be a half day per trip. Charlie, one of the guys on the team, walked around to the back of the pickup.
You know you have a trailer hitch on your truck, right? Doesn't Home Depot rent trailers?
Right, Bill said.
Let's see if we can find one.
Off came the portal hardware again, and the search began. Bill stepped through the gate with the rest of the crew to get a look around. The trailers were arrayed at the front of the store, chained to metal stays. Of course, the intent was to prevent a grab-and-run, rather than people who had all day to work on the problem. While most of the crew stood around, a couple of others went back into the store to find bolt cutters. As they were pushing the trailer through the large gate, there was a shout in the distance. Bill looked up just as something ricocheted off the Home Depot wall.
Jesus H! Charlie yelled. We're being shot at! Everyone through the gate!
As the crew ran through back to Outland, Bill took a moment to look closely at the approaching figures.
Those are uniforms.
One of the uniformed figures stopped and raised his rifle.
Uh-oh, time to go!
Bill leaped through the gate just as another bullet struck the brick side of the building.
Shut it down!
Charlie wasted no time closing the gate. Shocked silence reigned as everyone looked at each other.
We all here?
Bill asked.
Nothing left on Earthside?
A brief inventory of crew and equipment confirmed that everyone and everything was present.
Those were military, Matt said.
National Guard, I think, although I'm not really up on my uniforms.
Well, that kind of makes sense, Bill said. They'd be first in for an emergency like this. Isn't there a National Guard base in Lincoln anyway?
I think so. I'm sure someone will know. We can ask around when we get back.
Matt tapped his chin.
But maybe we can talk to them. There might not be a better time.
Are you nuts? They shot at us. Twice.
They thought we were looters.
We are looters, technically.
Yes, but...
Matt stopped talking and sighed.
Okay, point taken, but we're trying to feed about 300 people. Look, maybe we can combine our efforts. Maybe they have civilian refugees as well. We have to at least try.
Yeah, fine, but we have to do this carefully, Bill cautioned.
Agreed. I don't particularly want to get shot. Look, we learned a few things about the portals the first time we crossed over. We can set things up to keep the risk down. Here's what we'll do.
Private Andrews poked at the severed chain with his foot.
A trailer, right?
Timmonson waved his hand at the other trailers lined up along the front of the store.
It looks that way, but where is it?
For that matter, where are the guys we shot at?
Honest to God, they just disappeared.
People don't disappear, Howie.
They must have gone around a corner or something.
Do you see a corner?
Or an entrance? Or a manhole cover even?
Timmonson countered.
They didn't... Guys?
Timmonson and Andrews both whirled at the unexpected voice from behind them. Andrews automatically went into situation eval. The man stood about 20 feet away. He was dressed casually, no weapons in sight, alone. He had the look of someone you wouldn't want to try to push around, though, at least not without a lot of backup. Weight on the balls of his feet, well-balanced, shoulders not hunched, apparently relaxed. There would be no wrestling this guy to the ground, not with only himself and Timmonson. Andrews raised his rifle.
Hands on your head, get down on your knees.
The man didn't obey.
Guys, listen. I'm trying to get a discussion going here.
We're not what you...
Last chance, asshole! On your knees or you're dead!
The man sighed, looked to his right, and shrugged as if he was talking to someone. But he was facing a blank wall. What? Without warning, without taking a step, the man disappeared. Andrews looked wildly around, but there was no trace of him. There was something odd on the ground. It actually looked like grass. Then that disappeared as well, leaving only pavement.
What just happened? Timmonson said.
Andrews walked over to where the man had been standing and pushed his foot around on the pavement. It seemed completely normal. He turned to Timmonson.
Nothing happened. Nothing at all. We didn't see anybody, understand?
Timmonson frowned.
The guy disappeared, only, well, he kind of disappeared from the head down like he was being erased.
I know, Howie, I saw it too. Like I said, though, I don't want to have to explain this to Chavez. Matt stepped out of the gate as the two crew finished lowering it to the ground. The ellipse enclosed a patch of pavement, incongruous in the surrounding sea of prairie grass. As Charlie deactivated the device, the pavement faded out, leaving grass within the ring of the gate. The two men who had lowered the gate around Matt to bring him back tilted it back to vertical. Bill grinned at his friend.
I'd love to be able to listen to the conversation right now, Matt replied with a brief smile. No doubt that would be entertaining, but this is a big problem. We have to figure out how to talk to them without getting shot or arrested or both, possibly in that order.
66. In the news.
Here is the latest news on the hour from BBC World Service. South Korea's largest news agency reports that North Korea has begun amassing troops on the border between the two countries. In addition, the North Korean Navy has positioned itself just outside of South Korea's territorial boundary. Military experts point out that North Korea has traditionally been dependent on China for the resources to provide for its populace, even at the sub-poverty level at which the North Korean proletariat exists. With the recent Chinese withdrawal of military and economic aid, North Korea may be looking for alternative sources of supply. In a shocking move, six of the most debt-ridden nations on the planet, Greece, Italy, Egypt, Portugal, Spain, and France, have announced jointly that they will no longer be servicing their national debts. In addition, the European nations announced that they will no longer consider themselves part of the European Union. World markets, which were already taking a beating because of the Yellowstone crisis, dropped sharply from their already historic lows. And there are credible reports of multiple explosions in a number of U.S. state capitals. Several groups have claimed responsibility. At least one is a domestic American revolutionary group.
67. Farming Legacy. August 10th. Al and Joaquin sped down the side of the road, dodging back and forth from pavement to shoulder as necessary to get around the abandoned vehicles. Joaquin was sweating profusely. Trying to keep up with Al on a motorbike was nerve-wracking.
There's a reason they call him crazy.
Al wouldn't slow down an iota for Joaquin, but he would stop occasionally to wait if he got too far behind. When that happened, there'd always be some comment about Joaquin's skill, or lack of it. The two were on a tour of the farming communities around Lincoln, looking for supplies and equipment that would help set up an agricultural base in Rivendell. So far, all they had found were abandoned farmhouses and dead livestock. And worse. Joaquin's eyes teared briefly, recalling some of the scenes that he'd never be able to unsee. Up ahead, Al had turned down another long driveway and stopped to wait. Joaquin followed at a saner pace. As he turned the corner, he glanced at the mailbox, labeled Wildman.
This looks like a prosperous farm,
Joaquin said as he pulled up beside Al.
House and outbuildings all in good shape.
Let's hope,
Al replied. I'm getting tired of all the street driving.
What, dodging all the cars isn't enough excitement?
That's how I always drive. Usually the cars are moving too. This is boring.
Joaquin shook his head as they headed for the front door. Not that he doubted Al. The man was always on the edge of Darwining himself out.
Al pointed. Pickup's still in the garage.
If we can find keys, it'll be worth moving the big gate over here.
Joaquin knocked loudly on the door, then waited. So far, they hadn't found anyone still alive, but it would only take one half-dead, half-crazy resident protecting his or her home to make things go very bad. A repeated knock, along with loudly announcing their presence, produced no results. Joaquin tried the door. To his relief, it wasn't locked. They quickly went through the house, checking each room. Al opened one, then backed out quickly.
Oh, man.
Joaquin came over and peered through the door. Two adults, two children.
Recent, Al said. Odor's not as strong as...
Yeah, got it.
A couple of times they'd found corpses that were well into the process. The stench had driven them retching from the houses.
No obvious signs of struggle, Joaquin said. And they seem to have died at about the same time.
What, you're a cop now?
Joaquin motioned toward the bed.
They all died together. There's no weapon, no obvious wounds.
Al stared at the tableau in silence for a while.
If they hung around instead of leaving and ended up with that lung disease Aaron is always talking about, maybe an overdose or something would be a mercy.
We'll never know, Al.
Joaquin slowly closed the door, as if trying to avoid awakening the room's occupants.
Let's finish this and get out of here.
Yep.
He was a wheat farmer, all right, Matt said, surveying the barn. Lots of saved seed for next year. Lots of equipment. Obviously knows what he's doing. New.
He turned to Joaquin and Al.
Nice find, guys. Sorry about the residents, but this will help us considerably.
He examined the equipment.
Some of this equipment is too large even for the truck gate. You know anything about farm equipment?
Receiving a couple of head shakes, he continued.
I guess we'll have to get Bill in here. He can tell us whether we can break any of it down for transport.
Al motioned with his hand.
Big fuel tank around the back. Diesel, I bet.
That'll be handy.
Matt sighed and turned to go.
Let's see if we can find the keys to the pickup. That will be valuable, too.
Joaquin shuddered at the thought of rifling through the family's possessions. Rationally, he realized that the former owners of the farm were beyond caring, but he couldn't shake the feeling of being a ghoul.
68. Archimedes's Screw.
What the hell is that? Richard asked.
Archimedes' screw wind turbine, Bill replied. Named after the guy who invented it. You've heard of him?
Richard smiled, but didn't rise to the bait.
Well, look at that, Bill thought. Not too long ago, I would have gotten the kilowatt glare for that dig. This is the wind turbine design I was talking about before. It's supposed to be superior for extracting power from low-speed air movement. Also, stupidly easy to make. Just take a long strip of plastic or metal sheeting and wrap it around a central shaft. Cable stays are used to keep the shape and brace it against the mechanical strain. Seriously, you could build these things in your garage. Oh, wait. That's what I'm doing.
Bill smiled at his own joke and gestured with a wrench toward another table with hardware and tools strewn across it.
With the proper gearing, I can connect it to all those alternators we've collected, and we're ready to go.
And this will supply Rivendell with all the power we need?
Oh, not even close, Richard. Look, I'll be honest with you, I've never done this before. Rebuilding civilization, I mean. There are lots of different ways we could get electricity. Some are more short-term, like running diesel generators. Some are more long-term, like wood-fired steam-based generators. All we have to do is build them. Wind generators, solar panels, hydroelectric, well, maybe not in Nebraska, coal-fired? The problem is that everything except the diesel generators will require a lot of ramping up. I'm trying to get multiple parallel projects going so that even if one fails, we're not dead in the water.
I get it, Bill. More things to do than we have people to do them, even if the people had the knowledge.
We're lucky that way, anyway. University students are likely to have that knowledge, and it's fresh in our minds, although I'll admit it's all book knowledge, so there's a lot of fumbling around, too.
But you're making headway. Let me know how the wind thing works out. Richard made a note on his notepad and continued. How's the well drilling going? Bill put down the tool he'd been holding.
It helps to have a lot of crew from rural backgrounds who have some knowledge about where you should and shouldn't drill. We hit groundwater on our first attempt. It's shallow enough that we can use a suction pump. Standard well filtering and water conditioning equipment will handle the load as long as we've got a reservoir. For that, I've got people building a water tower using that 1,000-gallon storage tank we appropriated.
Why not use a standard well compressor?
For 300 residents? Richard, those things are made for households of up to, like, 6. Plus, I'm also concerned about heating the water. We can cover the tank with a black plastic tarp for solar heating, so we'll at least have warm showers. As long as it doesn't get too cold this winter, that'll be enough to prevent icing up, too. All we need, Bill gestured to the wind turbine, is a dependable source of electricity.
We can run on the generators until you have that ready, right? Richard asked.
Sure, but it means constantly importing more fuel, which also takes fuel, and keeps us dependent on Earthside. My engineer's heart is offended at the inefficiency.
Richard laughed, gave Bill a goodbye wave, and walked out, heading for the next stop on his self-appointed rounds. Bill watched him go and thought,
Richard is definitely a lot more relaxed these days. I think he's actually enjoying this.
As Richard walked away, Bill realized he was hearing him whistle the Andy Griffith Show theme. 69. In the News.
Here is the latest news on the hour from BBC World Service. Russia has completed its annexation of all former Soviet bloc countries on its borders. There are reports that Russia is now attempting to gain control of some Chinese border provinces as well. Today, Iran released a statement that it has successfully annexed Iraq and will be absorbing the former nation into its own borders. In an odd twist, Iraq later released a statement that it has successfully repelled the Iranian invasion force and is poised to advance on the Iranian capital of Tehran. India, Brazil, and China have each announced that they will be ending food exports in order to provide for their own populations. Economists speculate that other net food exporting countries will soon follow suit.
70. Recon. August 11th. Yet another meeting, this one attended only by the gate owners. Bill clamped down on his tendency to sigh and roll his eyes when bored. Of course, this one was about not getting shot, so maybe boredom should be less of an issue in the first place.
I thought the National Guard base was just south of the airport. We can check, but obviously not by simply walking around. We'll need the pole cam.
Matt looked around the table as he settled back into his lawn chair.
Which means the scavenging groups will be stalled, Bill said. Damn it, I need to build more pole cams.
You have the parts, don't you? Richard asked.
Sure, and the warehouse fab shop is still usable with the generator running, but Monica wants a couple more full-size gates, and I've still got all the infrastructure projects I'm working on.
Can't you hand off some of that? Aaron asked. I'm pretty sure you aren't the only UNL engineering student.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a delegation problem, but I'm also the only master's-level engineering student in Rivendell. Luck of the draw, I guess.
Bill, you have to be able to hand off something, Aaron added. Maybe not gate and portal construction, but geez, if your people can't connect a windmill to a generator, they shouldn't be in engineering.
Okay, listen, guys, Richard said.
If we can make peace with the National Guard, we stand to benefit greatly. So, this is an opportunity to take advantage of, not another time sink. As soon as Monica gets here...
Speaking of, Bill said, tilting his head toward Monica, who was just walking up to the table. It's the late Ms. Albertelli.
Miss me?
She smiled at the group as she unfolded a lawn chair and sat down.
How are the preparations going? Richard said, ignoring the pleasantries.
As good as can be expected, given that Bill is being pulled in umpteen different directions. We really need a couple of gates that are off the books, so to speak.
She favored Bill with a smile.
Poor guy's eyes are starting to spin in different directions.
Bill's a big boy, Richard said. He can handle it. Matt, take the pole cam. You're right about this being a priority. You'll have to decide who gets the truck, which will...
Nope, Matt cut in.
Couple of our scouts found a pickup with keys to go with it. Also a bunch of farming equipment and seed stock. It's on the list of things to bring across. I guess I'll bump up the priority on bringing the new truck across.
Juggle, juggle, Bill muttered. Richard rubbed his eyes with thumb and forefinger.
Gewalt. Okay, Matt, do whatever you have to. Bill, a pole cam should be quicker to produce than one of the full-size jobs. Can you knock out just one really quickly?
No prob, big guy, but I'll need a dedicated gate so I can cross over to the warehouse.
And another tree trimmer for the pole. He looked at Matt.
That's it, I quit, Matt said.
Get in line, Richard replied.
Jeez, what a bunch of whiners,
Monica got up.
Let me know when you've got something for me.
Richard watched her retreating back.
I think I pissed her off.
We're all a little on edge, Richard, said Aaron. Who knew that rebuilding civilization would be so much work?
71. Cleaned out. August 12th.
Hey, Charlie, almost ready to go?
Charlie turned at the voice.
Hi, Bill. Yeah. We'll be hitting that Walgreens we found a while back. What's the rush? Running out of coffee?
Bill grinned back. His coffee dependency was becoming a meme. It was rumored that he had stocked up more coffee than food, and he made no attempt to argue.
Not in this century. No, I wanted to ask a favor. If we have time after we unload the Walgreens, I'd like to run past the Scott Engineering Center to see what condition it's in. The scouting group hasn't been able to follow up on that, and I'm getting antsy. Sure. But it'll have to be a quick look, or we'll have to drop you off and pick you up later.
And you carry a mask, just in case, Charlie said.
5 minutes max, Bill replied. I'm not looking for anything specific, just want to see if it's still holding up. Why the mask?
Atmospheric dust is pretty much washed out now, but there are drifts of ash inside buildings that can still be stirred up. You wear a mask whenever you're going inside until you're sure it's safe.
Bill raised his eyebrows in surprise.
Wow, I've been away from the salvage group for like 2 days and I'm out of date. Things move fast.
Charlie grinned in reply and gestured toward the group gathered around the new pickup truck. Finding the Walgreens turned out to be a little more of a problem without the pole cam. They had to stop every few minutes, open the 6-foot gate, and lean through it with a GPS to check their location on Earthside. Eventually, though, they arrived at the desired coordinates. With two men carrying the gate, they were able to use it as a large, ungainly version of a pole cam. Soon they found the back door. They moved 10 feet, turned the gate back on, and they were able to see the inside of the store. The Pleistocene sunlight shining through the gate provided more than enough light for a clear view. This had been a large Walgreens. The building interior was a single large space with columns at regular intervals to hold up the roof. The roof hadn't completely collapsed under the weight of the ash. Instead, the supporting girders had buckled between columns. This resulted in a series of parallel tent-shaped spaces. A lot of shelves and goods had been flattened, but far more was intact in the tented areas. Charlie walked up and down the aisles.
What are we looking at, you think? 8 trips?
Even filling every inch of the pickup and trailer, this was going to be a huge haul. It wasn't just the food, since most of the perishable stuff would have gone bad by now.
It wasn't even the aisle containing nothing but different brands of coffee and tea. The big score was the first aid supplies and toiletries. It would be a few years minimum before anyone could go to a dentist again, so toothbrushes and toothpaste were worth their weight in gold.
"Okay, then," Bill said. "Let's get started."
Charlie followed Bill out the service entrance, taking a moment to peg the door open. The crew was almost done emptying out the store, and Bill and Charlie were more in the way than anything else.
"What are you looking for?"
Charlie asked as they walked.
"Anything, really," Bill replied. "We need so many things that just about anything we can find is probably going to be valuable."
Bill moved over to a nearby building that looked intact and tried the door. Charlie leaned up against a wall, waiting for Bill to finish with whatever personal journey he seemed to be having. Abruptly, they heard a shout.
"Hold it right there! Drop your weapon and put your hands up!"
Bill backed away from the door and turned toward the shout, reflexively reaching for his shotgun strap. There was a gunshot, and a bullet threw up a spray of damp ash near his feet.
"Put it down!"
Bill looked at Charlie, who seemed to be out of the immediate line of sight. He motioned with his head for Charlie to get moving. Charlie turned and sprinted away. There were shouts of, "Stop or we'll fire!" immediately followed by bullets pinging off the ground and nearby buildings.
"Maybe you meant, and we fire,"
Charlie thought as he turned another corner. He heard the sound of pounding feet behind him.
"Oh, great!"
He tried to put on a little more speed. As he approached the Walgreens service entrance, Charlie yelled,
"Get through the gate! We're under attack!"
The people inside must have heard him because by the time he got in the door, he could see their backsides going through the gate. One of the guys stood on the other side with a terrified expression on his face, holding the tablet with one finger poised. As he jumped through, Charlie shouted,
"Turn it off! Don't wait for Bill! Close it!"
Corporal Chavez gasped, trying to catch her breath without being too loud about it. She often made it clear that she was as good as any man, but damn it, that Stevenson could sprint like a mofo. They moved cautiously into the door that the fugitive had run through and looked around. It was a Walgreens. It was also virtually empty. Pretty much everything accessible had been taken from the shelves. Chavez guarded the door while Stevenson looked down each aisle and checked every possible location for hidey holes. Finally, he came back and shook his head.
"No idea how they got out or where all the food went."
They left the store, being sure to push the door closed until the latch clicked.
"Unbelievable. What part of Lyft is unclear to you?"
Charlie was upset, and he was taking it out on everyone around him. He knew it, and he could see that his crew knew it, but couldn't stop himself. The absence of the pole cam was almost crippling in this situation. Attempting to open the 6-foot gate right in front of whoever had been pursuing them would be strategically unsound, to put it mildly. Instead, they held the 6-foot gate horizontally at about eye level. A very slight tilt to the gate allowed Charlie to look through the aperture while keeping his exposure to a minimum.
"They're moving," he said. "We need to follow them or we'll lose Bill. Dickinson, you'll need to stay here and guard the salvage. Some of it has got to smell like food. Peters, you stay too. Watson and Shriver, get in the truck and handle the gate."
The driver looked up from his seat in the pickup. Reaching over, he hit the switch to lower the rear left passenger window to allow him to hear Charlie more easily. Charlie operated the tablet. He called out instructions when necessary. Slowly, the pickup moved along the prairie, following his directions. Finally, he asked the driver to stop. Earthside, Bill was being shepherded into the back of an army truck while a half dozen or so soldiers milled around the truck and a Hummer parked nearby. Charlie leaned as close to the gate as he dared and tried to make out the discussion on the other side. After a minute or so, the soldiers got into their vehicles and drove off at a much higher speed than the pickup could maintain over rough prairie, especially with a trailer full of groceries.
"Well, hell, those are National Guard,"
Charlie rubbed his chin and thought.
"Take us back to Rivendell. I'll update Peters and Dickinson on the radio, then update Rivendell. Maybe they'll have something worked out by the time we get back." Then we'll still have to arrange to get the rest of the Walgreens salvage back to the camp. Jeez, we still need more vehicles.
Into the truck. Up.
The soldier reinforced the command with a prod from his rifle barrel. Bill hurried to comply. He'd figured out quickly enough that these were National Guard, which at least meant they weren't going to kill him and eat him, or worse, pillage, then burn, went through his mind. He chuckled.
Something funny, asshole?
One of the soldiers asked him.
You think this is funny? You think you're in a funny position?
It would take too long to explain.
Yeah, and maybe you don't have that long,
the soldier retorted, waving her rifle in Bill's face. Bill paused to examine the soldier's insignia.
Save it, Corporal. SOP is for you to return me for interrogation. If you were undisciplined enough to ignore orders, you wouldn't still be here on duty.
He looked her straight in the eyes and continued in a calmer voice.
Look, we're doing what we can to survive. We're not stealing TVs to support a drug habit.
That's fine, but you're still going back to base, the corporal replied.
And that's fine, because I'll be very interested in talking to your CO.
Well, then everything's just fine, isn't it? This should be a pleasant Sunday drive, since we all want the same thing.
The corporal sat back but kept her gun pointed in his direction. Charlie had expected Richard to explode in anger. The man had a reputation, after all. Instead, he'd simply pinched the bridge of his nose and muttered something Scottish-sounding. Eventually, Richard looked up at Charlie and the rest of the crew.
Okay. Does anyone know where the National Guard base is?
Matt is looking for it, remember?
Charlie replied.
He, Cavi, Bob, and Ayanda have gone to scout around the airport. Several people thought it might be around there.
Right, right.
Chances are the guard will take Bill back to their base, so I sure hope Matt was right about that. I'll radio him if we don't hear something soon. Charlie, you'll have to drive us over to the base as soon as we know where it is. We need all the resources we have available on the spot and ready to react.
We also need the rest of that inventory from the Walgreens,
Krista said. As Richard turned angrily on her, she quickly added,
Look, if it starts to rain, we could lose it all, and we, including Bill, put a lot of effort into getting it out in the first place.
Richard snapped his jaw shut and nodded, then turned to Charlie.
Could the Bobcat make it there and back?
Oh, hell yes. There are no creeks or big gullies or anything between here and the Walgreens. Just follow the path we've already worn with the pickup. It'll be a lot more trips, using the bucket to haul the loot, but you can save the delicate items first and maybe wrap the other things in tarps if necessary. For that matter, I think it has a trailer hitch.
Okay, good enough. Krista, can you get someone started on that when we're done here?
At her nod, Richard continued.
We certainly don't want to start a war with the National Guard. First, because they're the good guys. Second, and not to put too fine a point on it, they probably outgun us by a wide margin.
He slumped his shoulders and thought for a few seconds.
On the other hand, we're not leaving Bill with them. That's not part of the plan. So we're going to have to find out what the reality is, then take steps to rescue him.
72. Things keep piling up. Matt watched the video image on the tablet as Cavi slowly turned the pole cam.
No obvious pickets, which is good, but no sign of life, which is bad. Did the troops bug out, do you think?
Cavi stopped what he was doing and turned to face Matt.
I doubt it. Looking at those buildings, my bet is they decided to find safer quarters. I'm surprised the structures haven't already come down.
Military construction, Bob said. Even so, I'd be nervous to be in that building.
So we just have to figure out where they went.
Matt said,
Great, that narrows it down to what? All of Lincoln?
Maybe we should let them come to us.
As the others turned to look at Ayanda in surprise, she continued,
Look, they'll probably stop and question anyone caught walking around, but as long as we're not actively looting or breaking into things, they probably won't shoot us out of hand.
You hope,
Bob said.
Are you suggesting what I think?
Matt said. Ayanda nodded.
One or two of us will go through and walk around. The ashes pretty much hard pan now, most places, so walking is a reasonable thing to be doing. Hopefully, sooner or later, they'll show up, and if not, we'll at least be able to recon faster than right now, where we have to do everything through the polecam.
Matt was silent for a few seconds, thinking about it.
It's not actually a terrible idea. There's a bit of a risk, though.
Sure. The same risk we take every time we go through to Earthside, but this time we're looking for contact. And you can pull us out with the gate if it turns into a shit show.
Sounds good, said Matt. Let's do it. Set up the person gate.
It took less than a minute for Ionda to swap out the pole cam for the 6-foot gate, while Matt informed Rivendell of the plan. Kavi and Bob stepped up, ready to go through. Matt held out his hands.
No weapons, guys. We don't want to give them a reason to be nervous.
The two men handed over their shotguns, then stepped through the gate. Matt and Ionda quickly switched back to the pole cam so they could follow and stay in communication. It took them a few seconds to catch up with the two men who were walking slowly toward the deserted buildings. The outland pair kept a good distance, staying just close enough to be able to keep Kavi and Bob in sight.
No sign of anything, Kavi said through the walkie-talkie. We're going to head north to the civilian airport.
That'll be a bit of a hike,
Ionda said to Matt.
Should we follow in the truck?
Or we could carry the pole cam, tablet, portal generator, and electrical generator in our pockets.
You're a bit of a dick, you know?
Matt grinned back, unrepentant. The journey took almost an hour. Matt and Ionda watched through the pole cam as Kavi and Bob investigated buildings, very carefully not doing anything that looked like breaking and entering. Finally, success, of a sort. Kavi and Bob stopped abruptly and raised their hands.
Unless they're messing with us, Ionda said, we have a bite.
Okay. Operation Follow Them commences, Matt said.
Really? Don't ever write a TV script.
Whatever, let's not lose them.
In short order, three soldiers came into view, rifles at the ready. There was a brief conversation. Kavi and Bob were relieved of their possessions, and the group began walking west. Matt and Ionda kept their distance and tried to keep the pole cam low and unobtrusive. The pole cam aperture wasn't large, but on Earthside, it would show a blue disc with a camera in the center. They didn't want the guardsmen to notice it. Kavi and Bob were eventually led to a hangar on the tarmac. As the pole cam was maneuvered into the interior, Matt gasped. A sea of tents and suspended tarps formed a ragtag refugee camp. The occupants stood or walked around aimlessly, the occasional uniform mixed with the population, showing that these weren't prisoners. Kavi and Bob were walked past this scene, craning their necks and gawking, until one of the soldiers started poking them with his rifle barrel.
Well, this is very interesting, Matt said. We have to see where our guys end up, then we'll radio this in.
Within a few minutes, Kavi and Bob were deposited in a room along the edge of the hangar, and a guard was placed outside the door.
Okay, good enough.
Matt changed to the Rivendell channel and pressed talk. Rivendell, Richard, this is Matt. The bait has been taken. Everything is in the green.
Not so much, Matt. Stay there and keep watch, and Charlie and I will join you. The guard has arrested Bill right in the middle of a scavenging op, which means he will be treated like a looter.
73. Doing Time. The soldier directed Bill out of the back of the truck. He found himself in a large warehouse space.
A hangar?
The ones at the Lincoln Airport had sloped roofs, so that seemed like a good possibility. The corporal had a clipped conversation with the driver, during which Bill managed to catch her last name, Chavez. As he waited, he realized that he was looking at an indoor tent city. He turned and scanned the crowd. A quick count indicated there were around 50 people, including a number of children. They looked dirty, tired, and desperate.
While we live the high life.
The corporal poked him with her rifle barrel.
These are the people that you stole food from their mouths, asshole.
Bill turned to her with a smirk.
These are the people from whose mouths you stole food.
He regretted that as soon as it came out. Baiting someone who was holding a weapon on him was probably not his most brilliant move ever. Sure enough, the corporal's face turned red, and she looked for a moment like she was going to shoot him and screw the rags. Instead, she gave him a hard shove with her rifle, and Bill turned in the indicated direction. They went through a door, and he found himself in a small, bare office with an officer sitting at a desk. The nameplate read, Lieutenant Collins.
"Well, it seems this is our lucky day,"
the lieutenant said to the corporal.
"No results for weeks, then suddenly three in one day."
He gave Bill the once-over and pointed to a chair. The officer took a sip from a cup of coffee and made a face, then stared at Bill in silence for a while.
"This is the softening up part," Bill thought. "I get real nervous and then try to fill the empty air with an explanation."
Bill stared back with an innocent expression on his face. After a while, the lieutenant sighed.
"You've been caught looting during a disaster, which means I can have you shot right here and now. So you're going to give me some answers, and they're going to be truthful."
Bill waited two beats before responding.
"Well, no, I wasn't caught looting. I was caught walking around in the general area of where your soldiers assumed some looting had been done. As for the rest, what you really want is to find out who I am, where I'm from, who else might be with me, and what other resources I might have, and I'm prepared to tell you all of that in as much detail as you want."
Lieutenant Collins stared at him for a second, then slowly smiled.
"You've sort of gone off script. Not a professional looter, I take it?"
"Do those really exist?"
Bill replied. He decided to try simple candor.
"Look, we're all just ad-libbing things, you know? Up until about 3 weeks ago, I was an engineering student at UNL.
"So then why don't you start by telling us how many people are in your gang or whatever it is?"
"A little over 300.
Lieutenant Collins' eyebrows rose at this statement.
300 people. And we've not seen hide nor hair of you. Nothing but a lot of tracks, despite almost a month of patrolling. How does that work, pray tell?"
Bill leaned back in his chair and did his best to look casual.
"Well, that's kind of a long story."
Lieutenant Collins spread his arms, palms up, looked around, then said,
"Corporal Chavez, please cancel all my appointments, including my date with the president."
Chavez grinned and made typing motions into the air. Then she said,
"Done."
They both turned to look at Bill, Chavez not quite able to suppress a smirk. Bill laughed out loud.
"Nice. I bow to your sarcasm, foo. I think we're going to get along."
74. Gotcha. Pete and Phil pulled over once they were out of sight of the camp. They had borrowed the bikes on the pretext of doing some scouting, and Pete promised himself that they would do some actual scouting at some point, but for now, he and Phil needed something to relax and a chance to tend the garden. He looked at Phil and patted his pocket. It wasn't that they thought they'd get in trouble for smoking a little pot. After all, there were literally no cops anywhere on this planet. Well, there were the two retired guys, but they didn't give a damn. But Pete had a limited supply and didn't feel like sharing with the entire student body. He motioned to a spot over by the trees, and they rode their bikes over to it. As they came to a stop, there was a pop, and Phil staggered and fell off his bike. As Pete's eyes widened in shock, there was another pop, and the world came to an end. Zeke and Carl hit the kill switches on the dirt bikes. They quickly pulled the bodies into the trees, then rolled the bikes into hiding. It took only seconds to remove the weapons and anything else of value from their victims. Zeke said,
"We'll have to move the bodies, maybe try to cover them. We can't spend all day parked next to a couple of corpses, and if animals come along and start dragging pieces of student around the landscape, it's going to set off alarms."
"So?
Why don't we just shoot anyone who comes looking?
Carl said. Zeke shook his head.
Carl, there's only two of us. If we give them time to run for their guns, we'll be outgunned 100-2. We have to be able to catch them by surprise.
After dark?
I'm not thrilled about walking around after dark.
Me either, Zeke said.
No, I was thinking around dinner time. They all gather in that fenced area in front of the sheds every day. We can approach from behind the sheds. I didn't see anyone watching on that side.
Carl shrugged in silent agreement, and they bent to the task of getting rid of the bodies. Dinner time. After a day of moving stuff around in the Earthside warehouse, Monica settled down gratefully with her plate of something stew. The colony had settled into a routine of communal meals. It helped a lot that a good fraction of the students were from rural homes and knew how to convert a deer into food. A couple of gallon-sized cans of chili added to the pot produced a very serviceable stew. Meals might get monotonous, but there would never be a lack of calories. Meals were always held inside the protected fenced area. The fence had been expanded as much as possible, using every available panel. Even so, many people had to seat themselves inside the sheds during mealtimes.
"Hey, where's Pete and Phil?"
someone asked. Monica looked around and didn't see them.
"The stoners are probably out getting blitzed again," she replied. "Or as they call it, scouting."
"You'd think hunger would have driven them back by now,"
Aaron observed dryly.
"Maybe they're in one of the sheds. I'll have a quick look."
Monica got up and headed for the second shed, plate in hand. Since it contained most of the equipment, it had a lot of convenient places to sit and eat. She walked slowly through the shed, looking left and right. The lights hanging from the ceiling gave adequate, if somewhat uneven, illumination.
"Going to have to watch our fuel usage for the generators until we can get more in," she thought idly.
Pallets of supplies alternated with crates of equipment and weapons. Off to one corner, the portal equipment had been stored, and there, sitting on one of the portal generators, was Kevin, writing in a notebook.
"Kind of primitive, isn't it?"
Monica asked, pointing at the notebook and pencil. She was careful to smile as she said it, as Kevin had a tendency to miss social cues. Today Kevin was getting it. He smiled back and said,
"Yeah, but running the generator just to recharge a tablet seems kind of wasteful, and in the longer term we're going to have to figure out how to live without it."
Monica nodded, then brought the conversation back on topic.
"So, hey, I'm looking for Phil and Pete. Seen them around? The stoners? No. Sorry."
Monica laughed inside at the thought that even Kevin got it where those two were concerned. Susie sat with her friends, enjoying the last bits of her meal. It had been another long day. In the tradition of familiarity breeds contempt, she found herself bored more often than not. After a while, even the roars of large, supposedly extinct cats in the distance lost its edge. And once she'd seen 20 or so mammoths, she was good for life. The days had fallen into a routine. Oh, it wasn't the same for everyone, of course. The scavenging parties had just run into far more excitement than they wanted. But for kitchen staff, not so much. She'd helped prepare the meal today, and once it had been handed over to the serving staff, she was free for the evening. "Venison chili again," Susie sighed. This Bill Rustad had an unholy fascination with chili. He'd stocked up literally gallons of the stuff in those big tins, but it was better than those meals ready to eat. Wow, talk about an oxymoron. She'd tried one and had decided that if someone needed to be punished, it would be enough to make them live on those for a day or two. As they ate, the friends compared notes.
"I got to help make fences again today," Bruno said.
"Oh, what fun. Not. I must have poked myself with the barbed wire 1,000 times.
"I'm on chainsaw duty," said Kurt. "I actually enjoyed myself. Maybe if I can't get a job as a history professor, I'll take up lumberjacking."
Susie had a sudden mental image of Kurt in a plaid shirt and a toque. She started singing the Lumberjack song and everyone cracked up.
I've been with the group that's been inventorying what we have and trying to figure out what we need the most, Joyce said. We finally finished and we're ready to give the scavenger crews a list. Up until now, they've been bringing back everything they find and it's kind of getting crowded.
It was an enjoyable moment, sitting with her friends, relaxing and talking about whatever came to mind. Susie saw movement by the fence right where it abutted the edge of the shed. Two figures were moving around. She heard a screech of rubbing metal as one of the figures pulled the fence panel up off the stake that had been holding it in place. Before she could make sense of what she was seeing, the other figure had rushed at her, grabbed her by the hair, and pushed a shotgun in her face. Erin watched Monica go into the shed. As she turned her attention back to her food, she heard a sudden grinding and scraping sound from the corner where the fence attached to the shed. She swiveled her head to look, and the sight was so unexpected that for a second she was unable to make sense of it. It was two of the thugs from the warehouse altercation. One had yanked the fence panel off the stake, and the other had moved quickly into the compound. Before anyone could react, that guy had grabbed a student by the hair and held a shotgun to her head. He gave a nasty grin and yelled,
"Nobody moves or the kid's brains get splattered all over. If I see a gun, if I see anyone run for the shed, if I see anything that makes me upset, the kid's dead."
As Erin got to her feet, she realized that the other thug, the big ugly one with the beard, was bearing down on her. Before she could think what to do, he grabbed her by the front of her shirt and pressed a pistol under her nose. She had time to see that he had a shotgun on a shoulder strap. Erin's brain re-engaged, and she remembered their names, Zeke and Carl. She glanced around, but couldn't see the third one, Jimmy. Erin glanced in the direction of the shed and could just make out Monica's head peering around the door. Carl, meanwhile, raised his voice so that all could hear.
"Unless you want her to join the two shitheads with the bikes, you're all going to do what we tell you."
Someone called out,
"Wait, you mean Pete and Phil? Where are they? What did you do with them?"
Zeke responded with a laugh.
"They're lion food now, shithead, which you'll be in a minute too if you don't shut the fuck up. Now, where's the dweeb that runs the time machine? Kevin was his name."
A few people looked at each other in confusion. Finally, one student said,
"You mean the portal? Kevin's one of the..."
"Sure, geeky, skinny, glasses, pushes the buttons. Get him. Now."
The student looked perplexed, then said,
"I think he's in the shed,"
and gestured toward the second shed.
"Then you go get him, dweeb, but nobody else moves. And if someone comes out with a gun, boom."
He inclined his head toward Erin to emphasize his point. Monica and Kevin had missed the first part of the drama out front but caught all the dialogue. Monica peeked around the corner and saw Zeke with his gun at Aaron's head, and she heard the part about Pete and Phil being dead. As this all sunk in, Monica's teeth gritted and her eyes narrowed to slits. She felt herself sinking into a white-hot rage as the world narrowed down to one single imperative. Monica had learned from her brothers at an early age that you gave no quarter and you asked for no quarter. You paid back all insults with interest, and you always maintained a scorched earth policy. Now, the thugs had killed people she knew and liked, and were holding a gun on her best friend.
"This is war, you fat, impotent fucktards. Prepare to be dead." "Kevin," she whispered, "you're going to do exactly what they say. You're going to cooperate. Don't do anything to endanger Erin or the other student. But don't tell them I'm here. And if they ask, we only have one gate here right now, okay? We just have two, and the other one is with the scavenging party. Got it?"
Kevin was already shaking with fear. As Bruno came up to them and opened his mouth to talk, Monica held up her hand to stop him and put a finger to her lips in a shushing motion. She gestured to Kevin to go back with Bruno. Monica waved over a group of students that had been in the shed when the excitement started. She pointed to one and said to him in a low voice,
"Get me an AR-15 and some spare magazines,"
she said to a second one.
"Make sure there's an extension cord running to that corner,"
and motioned with her head. She indicated a third student and said,
"Help me haul some equipment over here."
Moving quickly, they carried one of the portal generators and a 6-foot gate over to the corner. She plugged the portal generator into an extension cord that the second student was holding and connected the feeds from the portal generator to the gate. Monica had watched the others operate the gates many times and had made a point of asking questions. Now she took the tablet and fired up the gate. As the gate faded into being, the first student came and held out an assault rifle. She took the weapon and checked it. She turned to one of the students and said,
"When I'm through, turn it off. If you don't know how, just pull out the plug, but make sure it's off. Turn it back on in 5 minutes and send through some well-armed people."
With that, she stepped through the gate. 75. Contact.
"We found him,"
Charlie announced. Everyone crowded around him to look at the tablet. The image showed Bill lying on a wooden bench in a windowless room. As they watched, he looked up, smiled, and waved. Then he motioned to the camera to come closer. Charlie lowered the pole cam by dead reckoning until it hovered 2 feet in front of Bill's face. This put it below the bed of the truck where they were all standing. They looked down through the gate and they could see Bill, live, smiling at them around the camera from another universe. Richard jumped down from the truck, went over to the small gate, and whispered through it to Bill,
"We can get you out. We have a 6-foot gate."
Bill shook his head and said in a low voice,
"That's fine, but I don't want to just disappear. I think we have a good possibility of getting these guys to join us, and they've got civilian refugees that they're trying to care for. I can give you details on all that later. For now, I think I need to stay."
"You aren't worried about being shot as a looter?" Richard asked.
"If they were going to do that, they'd have done it already. Now, I think they'd have to hold a trial of some sort. But rescue the other two guys. We don't need them here now that they have me."
"Having those two disappear might set them off."
"Probably not. These aren't mindless grunts, Richard. They seem pretty decent, other than the shooting looters thing. And it'll help validate my story, I think."
"Okay. It's your funeral, possibly."
Bob and Kavi looked up at the pole cam and smiled in unison.
"About time," Kavi said. "I'm too pretty for prison life."
"I'm sure you'll find the frontier lifestyle far more luxurious," Richard said as he gestured for Charlie to set up the 6-foot gate. He turned back to the pole cam. "We'll have you out in a moment. Bill is under arrest now, so I guess we have them right where they want us, or something like that."
At that moment, the gate powered up. The two got to their feet as Richard gestured for the pole cam to be deactivated. He looked over just as they stepped through the gate.
"That corporal is going to have a full-on fit," Bob said. "I hope Bill survives."
"So do I," Richard said. "Strangely, so do I."
76. Interviews. The door opened with a bang.
"All right, asshole. Time for you to do some talking."
Bill just had time to sit up before two soldiers grabbed him by the arms and dragged him past Corporal Chavez. Her scowl had evolved to a level that could peel paint. Bill tried not to smile as he struggled to get his feet under him. They'd probably discovered Bob and Kavi missing. Soon he was once again seated in Lieutenant Collins's office. The lieutenant wasted no time with pleasantries.
"We captured two individuals who claimed to be part of your group."
"And now they're gone?" Bill kept his face deadpan. Trial requirements or not, his usual smug grin might still get him shot. The lieutenant straightened up.
"And how did you know that?"
"I told Richard to do it."
"After you were captured?" So you can talk to your people at will and free prisoners from inside a military base whenever you feel like it?
Bill bobbed his head.
Pretty much.
The lieutenant sighed and settled back against the edge of his desk.
You said earlier that you'd be willing to talk. Now would be a good time.
Not a problem. However, I'm not at my best without coffee.
Chavez sputtered.
You want us to serve you coffee?
She turned to the lieutenant.
Let me shoot him, sir, please. Just in the knee?
It's all right, Corporal. Either it will be worthwhile in the end, or it'll be one more reason for a firing squad. Let's play along for now.
He smiled at Bill without any trace of humor and gestured to the soldier.
Get the man a coffee, please, Stevenson.
Bill took a sip of coffee. Wow, this is bad.
You're welcome,
Chavez replied. Bill shrugged.
And thanks, but you can't tell me you're drinking this because you like it.
For the first time since he'd known her, Chavez smiled at him in a way that didn't hint at mayhem.
No, not with a straight face anyway, but it's what we have. We'd have better coffee if you hadn't cleaned out the Walgreens.
And on that subject, Lieutenant Collins said, how about that information you promised?
Bill settled back, took another sip of coffee, shuddered, and began to speak.
And that's how I spent my summer vacation, Bill finished, having talked for 10 minutes without interruption.
Lieutenant Collins and Corporal Chavez stared at him with blank faces, their jaws hanging so far down they were in danger of becoming unhinged.
Of all the...
Chavez sputtered.
You've got to be, Collins huffed.
Makes sense to me, a third voice replied over them. Collins and Chavez cut off what they'd been saying and turned to Private Stevenson in astonishment. Stevenson returned their glares with a shrug and waved a hand toward Bill.
You think about all the tracks that we've been seeing that just petered out into thin air, the buildings that had been cleaned out without apparently being opened? What better way than an interdimensional gate, or a time machine, maybe?
Stevenson looked at Bill. Bill shook his head.
Sorry, no time machine.
He turned to Collins.
Look, we'd been intending to release this invention and collect our Nobel Prizes eventually, but the eruption caught us by surprise. But it is an actual way out for people. We'll be happy to turn everything over to the military. You can use it to save a lot more lives than we can.
No, we can't. Not really, Collins said. You've gotten a lot of info from your satellite TV, and it's mostly pretty good intel, but it's nowhere near the complete picture. The military has much better and more hardened communications. I'm probably not revealing any secrets by telling you that.
Bill smiled and shook his head. Lieutenant Collins continued.
I'm not sure that there's a United States left as such. There have been no official communications for almost 10 days. What we've been able to piece together is that Washington fell by the end of the first week. The president was unaccounted for, and they took too long to start succession proceedings. There were more attacks, and I don't know how far down the chain of succession they ended up, but it's possible that the White House janitor is now nominally president. There are up to a dozen local despots who've declared independence over shortwave, and what concerns me is that they haven't been shut down. That means that they are in de facto unsecured territory. The situation worldwide is bad, and getting worse. There were nukes used in the Middle East. The BBC was right about that, but there were also nukes used in Pakistan, which wasn't reported because by then the news reporting channels had broken down. Also, the Koreas went nuclear. Russia and China have swallowed all their satellite states and are now taking gouges out of each other. It'll stop when neither has anything left to fight with. What's telling is that already neither one has anything to nuke the other with. It's truly in the shitter. Meanwhile, we have no more resources than you to build or advertise the existence of this device, and I doubt anyone out there has the wherewithal to do anything with the information, even if we did.
Lieutenant Collins's face had a haunted look. We've been continuing to operate as the National Guard because it's what we swore to do and because, frankly,